Always Holding to Smallville is brought to you by listeners like you. Nathan McKenzie, Dallas Hernandez, Gavante Chillis, Chris Fuchs, Joe Mickendo, Steve Rogers, Thomas Navin, Tim Miller, John Curcio, Atif Sheik, Molly Ficarella, Trayvon Brady, Mike Franz, John Lloyd, Mariana Sachi, Alana Gibbs, Rachel Miller, Casey Cochran, Andrew Parker, Nick Ryan Magdoza, Becca Zeifel, Eddie Bissell, Cameron Minard, Dylan D'Antonio, Nicholas Fansler, Catherine Caldwell, Kathleen Holland, Tom Gerke, T. Hamill, Nicholas Cosso, Jared Gibbs, Erica Flynn, Darren Kirch, and Jessica Kaminsky. Thank you so much to all these patrons, and you too can become a patron by going to patreon.com/alwaysmallville with one S. Hope to see you there.
I'm John Glover. I was Lionel Luther on Smallville, and I will always, always hold on to Smallville. And I hope you all do too.
Welcome to Always Holding to Smallville. In this podcast, we talk about each and every episode of the Young Superman show. They ran from 2001 to 2011 on the WB and the CW. I'm your host, Zach Moore, and I'm joined this week by, from the We Made This podcasting network and the X-Cast and X-Files podcast, Mr. Tony Black. What's up, Tony?
Hey, Zach. It is so nice to be back on Always Hold On to Smallville. Do you know it's been 3 years since I've been on this show?
3 years, and actually that 3 seasons as well, because you're in season two.
Yep, season two. And in fairness, you have tried various points during season three, season four, to get me back on, and it hasn't worked out. And that's entirely my fault, really. But, like, it's nice. It's a real pleasure to be back. And for such a, like, quite an important episode as well, quite a momentous episode in a way of Smallville. So I'm really honored.
Yes, very much so. And, you know, you're a busy guy. You have, like, what, 15, 16 podcasts now, I think, you have going on. Yeah. So
I've lost count now. Even I have no idea.
So you're hard to pin down. But yes, this is a very mythology-heavy episode.
Yeah.
Of Smallville. Now, let me ask you, you know, last week we had our mutual friend Matt Latham on, and we talked about Splinter. And that's a really heavy, you know, James Marsters Brainiac episode, as is this. Mm. And I know he's a huge Buffy fan. That was a big reason I wanted to talk to him about it. But where do you stand on, like, Buffy? Because obviously James Marsters came to prominence in geek culture playing Spike on Buffy and Angel. So are you a Buffy Angel guy? Did you have experience with James Marsters before this? What's your stance on all that?
I wouldn't say I'm a Buffy Angel guy. I have seen them. I've known Matt Latham for 15 years now, getting on for that, and I know how much of a massive, massive fan he is of that show. We kind of met through our associated interest in things around Buffy and Angel, but I didn't really watch it, Buffy and Angel, till I'd say 2012, 2013. It was one of those shows where for years and years people have been telling me it was brilliant. Go and watch it. It was brilliant. Go and watch it. So it wasn't one of those shows, a bit like Smallville is to you or The X-Files is to me, where I grew up with that passion for it and that, you know, association. And I absolutely have enjoyed lots of Buffy, lots of Angel, but I'm not a Whedonite. I'm not one of them. You know, I'm just somebody who caught it, watched it later in life. So James Marsters is somebody who I wouldn't have that level of connection with, like, some of the other, quite a lot of the other actors who might have appeared on Smallville at various points. You know what I mean? Or, you know, those connections.
Yeah, James Marsters, he was never on The X-Files, unlike everybody else, right?
No, which is surprising, really. You'd think he would have been, actually. It's weird that he never was. But he's a good actor. He is a good actor. And, you know, I remember him as well from Torchwood, the British TV show, because he was a bad guy in that as well. So he loves his bad guys, doesn't he, James?
He does. He does. He does it well. And you know, just one last point on people trying to get you on Buffy and Angel. To my credit, I don't think I ever told you Smallville was brilliant when you got into it. I don't know.
I think you may have mentioned it, Zach, every now and then. Once or twice.
Oh, boy. So, you know, Smallville, talking about solitude. The Fortress of Solitude is where the title comes from this week. They don't say Fortress of Solitude in this episode. I was listening. They say Fortress a lot. And they're like, if you destroy his fortress, you destroy his power, all that kind of stuff. Nobody. So I think Fortress might have been a better title for this episode. Or, I don't know. Clearly they didn't know either, because like, I don't know, they go to the Fortress of Solitude, call it Solitude. Nothing came to mind as a better title for me.
Well, weirdly though, there isn't really any solitude in it, or there is the Fortress of Solitude, but you'd think they would have called it Solitude if it had been an episode where Clark is trapped in the fortress or something like that, and he's on his own, or you know, someone gets lost somewhere. There isn't really anything like that, so yeah, why not just call it Fortress? It's a strange choice. It's a strange choice.
Crystal. Disease.
Yeah. But I was going to say Black Rod, but you can't have two names in a Smallville title, can you? So you couldn't name it after the Kryptonian, weapon or such.
Yeah, that self-destruct crystal. Anyway. It is a heavy mythology episode. We'll delve into it. And there's actually some ties and references to the Superman movies, actually, at least by General Zod. So we can talk about that as well. But let's get into it. Solitude.
A mark showed up on my mom. The doctors don't know what it is.
Describe it to me.
It's like a bruise with veiny strands.
Did it start on the left shoulder?
Yes.
Your father tortured his dissidents on Krypton the same exact way.
What?
I don't suppose I can hide the truth from you any longer. He was a violent dictator. He ruled over Krypton with an iron grip of fear and intimidation. Anybody who spoke out against him was locked away. Even the great hero of the people, Zod. Maybe if he hadn't been captured, Zod could have stopped your father from eviscerating the planet.
My father destroyed Krypton.
Billions of people died. But he made sure his only son survived. Also that one day you could conquer the human race and recreate Krypton on Earth.
Why should I believe you?
Believe what you will. My concern is for your mother's health. I need to see her immediately.
Solitude is the eighth episode of Smallville's fifth season. It aired on November 17th, 2005. Written by Todd Slavkin and Darren Swimmer, and directed by Paul Shapiro. So we start out and it's space, the final frontier.
Wrong podcast, Zach. Wrong podcast.
I crossed the streams there. But yeah, we started on this star field. And I'm like, oh, this is unique. But then we kind of pan down to the Kent farm. And we get Martha and Lois coming home. Lois is dropping Martha off because their car is in the shop or something. And Lois has a new car. So it's funny because I thought to myself, is this Martha's car? Whose car is this? Because I know Lois had like an SUV before. And then the show immediately answers it for me. It's like, oh, she has a new car. Little did I know this new car would play such an integral part of the show.
Yeah.
And it does, honestly, this episode, to kind of jump ahead, like Martha Kent is on her deathbed. And we think it might be, Clark thinks it might be the reckoning of his deal he made with Jor-El, or not the deal he made, really. Jor-El did it himself. He resurrected Clark at the beginning of the season. He said, hey, someone you love is going to die, And, there are parts of this episode that make you think like, oh, well, maybe they will kill Martha. Maybe they're going to switch it up. Maybe they're going to kill Martha instead of Jonathan, because everyone's like, oh, they're going to kill Jonathan, right? That's a lot of the Superman mythology. You look at Superman the movie, you look at other comic books and stories and Man of Steel, Jonathan Kent dies. But like this one did a good job of making you actually think maybe they will kill Martha. And this little moment here is one of them. She like tells Lois, "Lois, you know, I'm very proud of you. You got a job and an apartment and a new car, you know." And I'm like, "Oh, are they like wrapping up her stories with these characters?" I don't know. I just thought that was pretty clever to sprinkle that in. They made it, because usually you're like, they're not gonna kill a main character, come on. But you know, spoilers, they are. It's gonna be the other parent. But this episode, I think through the journey of it, it made you actually question that they might do it to Martha. That was my thought anyway.
Yeah, no, I suppose so. I mean, I went into this obviously with having seen, you know, what comes next, knowing that in like, I think it's, is it three episodes time, Reckoning, where Jonathan's killed.
Yeah, it's the 100th episode, so it's about four episodes from now.
Right, yeah. So knowing that happens, obviously. So I wonder, had I watched it at the time, fresh, that I might have wondered this. When the reality is, the whole thing in that sense is a bit of a sleight of hand, isn't it? It's trying to make you believe that Martha's going to die, and then, oh, no, she'll be fine. And, you know, oh, maybe they won't then. And then you know, Jonathan dies. But it's one of those, it's like an interesting way of playing with your perceptions, I guess, and like you say, subverting established Superman mythology in an episode that is full of all of those references. I mean, is this the first time, like, and I'm not trying to jump ahead of here or anything, but is this the first time that they sort of do a lot of this mythology in this episode, or is it, because I can't remember.
Well, it's the first time they really start leaning into, well, the season 5 premiere, they build the Fortress of Solitude, right? And that is, oh, I know this from the movies, right? But, you know, before this, it had been, you know, Jor-El, right? We talked about Jor-El a lot, but they had the caves.
Yeah.
Right. And that was the main thing. But then when Superman Returns came out, there was like an understanding, like, all right, we got to get in alignment here because people are going to get confused.
Mm.
So Superman Returns was in line with the Richard Donner films. And then they made Smallville in line with that, because there's a big shift in all the Kryptonian technology. You know, it was like shapes and geometric things and like this metallic material. And then you get to season 5 and everything is crystals and the fortress and all that. Now, Brainiac is kind of like in between, which is like a go-between there. But yes, you talk about, you know, General Zod had been mentioned very briefly at the first couple episodes of the season.
Right.
But this is the first time we're getting any kind of mythology about what Krypton was like. You know, Jor-El, like Brainiac is really telling him stuff here. And it's a good misdirect, too, because he's telling him about Jor-El. And you're like, oh, well, Jor-El was kind of a dick in Smallville. Maybe he's right. So I think they're actually leaning into the fact that they've had some contradictory things in the past about the characters, and they're using it to their advantage here. So anyway, I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
So Lois drops Martha off, and then Martha gets hit by a scene from Close Encounters of the Third Kind, straight out of the sky.
Yeah.
You know, the mailbox starts moving, and we get this flashlight. And she gets, it's very like, you know, spoilers, obviously Brainiac did this, not Jor-El. Brainiac, he'd been very subtle up till this point, and this time he's like, I don't know, send some energy bolt out of the sky to zap Martha. I don't know. I guess it was to get Clark's attention too, because it's all manufactured, but it was an odd way to deliver this disease to her by just shocking her from a lightning bolt from the sky.
How does he do it as well? I mean, unless I've missed something, where does that bolt come from as such? Does it come from his ship?
That's the thing with everything, anything any Kryptonian does on this show. You're like, how does Jor-El do XYZ? How does Brainiac do XYZ? It's very deus ex machina a lot of the times with Jor-El, and it's like, you know, instead of at the end here, it's at the beginning with Martha. The ship used to do the same thing. Mm. Think about season 2, like the ship just turned on and healed everyone.
Mm, yeah.
It's like, well, healed Martha from being having a barren womb. That's why she got pregnant in season 2. Why the ship does that to her, and other times it just neutralizes kryptonite. Who's to say? Mm. It's just the inconsistency is kind of annoying for someone who's sitting here doing a podcast, taking notes, and trying to make sense of all this. I do not disagree.
But the thing is, though, I mean, I like to think I'm not one of these kind of fans who nitpicks to the nth degree. Like, you know, if there's a good story, I can go with it. And I enjoyed this episode, so I've like,
yes,
I can entirely go with it. You know, it doesn't really matter. But at the same time, I'm a bit like, okay, how? In the back of my mind, but it's fine. I'll let it go.
Just Kryptonian. Give me something. But yeah, it's Kryptonian.
It's Kryptonian,
right?
Magic. Fine.
A wizard did it.
Yeah,
Kryptonian did it. That's how those are the rules we're operating under.
Yeah,
Clark runs out there. Clark runs out there. Martha's, you know, knocked out in the driveway. And we cut to our opening credits, and we come back. And Clark's at the Daily Planet checking in with Chloe about the weather report from yesterday. She makes a funny comment about most people are concerned about tomorrow's weather forecast and not yesterday's weather yeah. report. And they start theorizing over, like, you know, weather events, like, was she struck by lightning? Was maybe some fireworks go off nearby? They apparently took her to the doctor, and she was fine for now. Mm-hmm. But Clark is still really worried about it. And Chloe's like, I don't get it. If she's fine, what's the problem? And Clark says, well, I think it has something to do with Jor-El. And it's so funny. Like, I think eventually, maybe about the last third of the show, they stopped doing this. Mm-hmm. But whenever they mention Jor-El in, like, the first half of the show, it's like, oh, your biological father?
It's like, just a reminder. Episodic
TV at its best.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. I did think when he said that, I thought, well, that's... You've made a bit of a leap here, Clark. Like, you've immediately assumed that it's Jor-El. I mean, is it one of those things where he just now assumes any bad stuff that happens or anything dodgy or anything Kryptonian possibly is probably his dead but not quite dead voice in the wilderness dad? You know, or was it just a bit of a leap that they needed him to make for plot purposes?
Well, he has been shown to be able to do anything, Jor-El.
Yeah.
But especially this season because he knows that he has this thing hanging over him that someone you love is going to die. He's, of course, going to read that into anything that might happen. Mm. So, but you're right. It's Smallville. Weird stuff happens all the time.
Yeah.
Now, this is another instance of, you know, episodic TV going on here.
Yeah.
Because he tells her, he basically tells Chloe about, you know, the deal, what's happening. Mm. But at the end of Hidden, which is the episode where he got resurrected and Jor-El told him about all this, the last scene is him and Chloe, and he doesn't necessarily just tell her, so I guess it's not really a contradiction, but the last line of the episode is, Chloe, I think I've made a terrible mistake. And you assume when the episode, you know, the episode ends, but that conversation continues and he tells her what's up. Mm. But because that was five episodes ago, we gotta get everybody up to speed. it can be seen as like repeating the same information. But anyway, we get Lois and Lex at the Talon as our next scene, and this kind of episode right here is why I did not take Lois Lane seriously for several years on this show, because she, Lex is doing his photo shoot because he's running for senator, and Lois is like, doesn't matter how many pictures you take. Still look the same, which was kind of funny. And then apparently Lex is like, okay, guys, we're good. Like, and he actually did say, like, it actually did make him stop doing the pictures, which I thought was funny.
Yeah.
But he, you know, she's giving him a hard time. And he's like, I don't know if you noticed, but I own the talent.
Yeah. Like, you know, no, I'm not the best person to be doing this to, Lois, by the way.
I'm technically your boss. Yeah. So, you know, and yes, Martha Kent also works there. And then his opponent is Jonathan Kent. So there's a conflict of interest somewhere in there, but not on his end because he owns the place. But I like when he goes over to her and he says, what have I ever done to you, Lois? Why are you so mad? It's true because Lex and Lois have had like no scenes together this entire series so far. I think that the episode Lucy in season 4 with Lois's little sister, they actually had some scenes together, but I think that might have been literally the only episode where they interact at all to this point. So it is funny. I mean, like, you have Lex kind of, you know, quote unquote, putting her in her place, where he's like, well, thanks, Lois. I'll remember that next time I need some savvy political advice from a college dropout muffin peddler.
Muffin peddler, yeah. Because that's what she takes offense to, isn't it? You called me a muffin peddler.
Which, by the way, do you have banana blueberry today?
Yeah, it's pretty good, isn't it? Such a sleazeball.
We're prone to like Lex, obviously, because we love seeing him do this to people.
Yeah.
But Lois is like one of our characters now. She's like, oh no, he's ruffling some feathers. But honestly, it's like Lex is right. Like I'm on Lex's side of this entire conversation because again, she works at the Talon. Lex is the boss. He gets to do what he wants to do. Whatever. I don't know.
But I suppose you could make an argument that Lex's attitude here and the way he is with her kind of is the spark that will lead her eventually to her entire career. You know, because right? It's after this that she then decides she's going to help Chloe, and then by the end that seed is planted, isn't it? So it's his fault, really. It's his fault that Lois Lane becomes Lois Lane.
That's right. Clark Kent created Lex Luthor, but Lex Luthor created Lois Lane.
Exactly.
It's true. No, this really is. I mean, other than Lois is working at the Torch in high school for a couple episodes in season four, this is really the start of her. This is really the start of her being in journalism. So you're absolutely right there, Tony. Now we get to our next scene with Dr. Milton Fine, or Professor Milton Fine. And he starts his line with, "Oh, the Earth was created in 7 days, some believe, and it took you a week to trust me," which is like, I don't know, it's an odd way to start this conversation. And I must say, last week, Dr. Fine, you know, he's a Kryptonian, he's, you know, a brainiac, right? So he clearly doesn't understand the nuances of the Bible, because he referred to Jesus and Judas as best friends, which was inaccurate. And also, you know, if you know your biblical text, God took 6 days to create the earth, and on the seventh day he rested. But I move on. Anyway, this also establishes it's been a week since the last episode, because that's when Clark found out about who Fine, quote-unquote, really was, or at least he knew he was from Krypton. But there was a big deal at the end of that episode with, like, Lex had gotten really beat up by Clark, and his face looked all terrible. And Lionel was like, "You better wait a while before you have any, you know, press conferences or anything." And here we are a week later, he's having a photo shoot. So I guess he healed quickly, which...
Yeah. Episodic TV again. Strikes again.
You know, somebody breaks an arm, somebody gets beat up. Next week, they're totally fine. And they even establish it's been a week. That, you know, usually you could say, "Oh, well, you don't know how much time's passed during these episodes." That's usually the out. No, we said it's a week in this scene. But anyway, well, Clark wants to know more about Jor-El. And I really like, and this is the last episode we get this, we get Fine as the college professor. But I love the way he talks about stuff, like as a college professor, because Clark wants to know more about Jor-El. And he's like, "Well, like all great figures in history, he can only be understood in the proper context."
Yeah, you know, like that made me laugh.
Like he's going to give him a lecture, right?
Yeah. Sort of comparing him to some sort of, you know, great war general or like historic leader or that kind of thing. Yeah, I like this sort of dynamic they play with them all through the episode, Clark and Fine, because he is the, you know, the wolf in sheep's clothing, isn't he? He is the mentor who is guiding him down a dark path, even to the point he wears black all the way through the episode. Just in case you weren't sure that he was evil deep down. It's a good relationship, and you know this episode is a good use of James Masters in that kind of role. So I liked all the scenes between the two of them.
Yeah, they have a great dynamic, and that, you know, obviously that ends at the end of this episode. Well, obviously, Fine comes back throughout the series. He's one of the longest recurring guest villains. But this phase of their relationship, I do like the best. As you said, the wolf in sheep's clothing, because you believe it. You know that Fine is BSing him. But you believe it because Marster's really, you know, he really sells it.
He does.
You know, Clark gets really impatient. "No, I want to know now." And then he says, "Impatience is such a pathetic human trait."
But it was also that his impatience in many ways leads to Fine being able to manipulate him. You know, if he was more patient, he took things more in his stride. Things might not have got to the point that they did in the fortress later. You know, he's rushing for this information because he wants to know the truth. And it is that whole sort of idea that, is he ready? Is he entirely ready for all the truth that is out there? And that's the sort of underlying thing that I thought this episode was all about, really. That are these characters, particularly Clark, ready for, you know, what he's going to discover about his past, you know, and his family's past and his world's past?
Absolutely. And then just a final production note on this scene. I liked that all these up angles they were shooting at. It was more interesting visually than like your standard like over the shoulder reverse shot. Like, I don't know why they did, maybe to show off that cool skylight they had. And this is the coolest like college lecture room ever, by the way. Yeah. I wish my lecture room was like this.
It was great. Yeah.
I'm sure they went on location for that. There's no way they built that set. Poor went out for the cool college lecture hall, because it's the last time we see it in Smallville, now that Milton Fine is no longer a professor. But anyway. So Clark goes to tell his parents about Fine, because he just found out at the end of the last episode. He told him within a week, which I guess is fine. And Fine, no pun intended, Fine.
missed that.
Jonathan's reaction is, as you would expect, he's like, Clarky, you need to steer clear of this fella. You know?
Yeah.
And, but, you know, Jonathan, he seems paranoid here because, you know, Clark's saying he's a Kryptonian. He calls me Kal-El. You know, Jonathan's saying every Kryptonian we've ever encountered is bad news. Martha's like, Jonathan, don't judge a whole race by some people. Remember that Clark is Kryptonian. I'm like, all right, I applaud your message about non-judgment.
But
it's just, it felt...
But Martha, there's quite a lot of evidence that maybe this won't turn out entirely well. I'm on Jonathan's side. Any note of caution, I think, at this stage, like 96 episodes into the show, is fair play, you know, the amount they've been through. And I suppose for Jonathan as well, it's that whole thing. Any sort of mention of Jor-El, there is that underlying element of, well, jealousy in some respects, but also caution about... You know, Clark getting sucked too deeply into this mysterious past and these, you know, these arch strange figures, you know, from different worlds, because he's ultimately, he knows that Clark might have all these powers and he might end up, you know, one day he's going to be Superman, but he's still a young guy, really. He's not a child, but he's a young man who can be manipulated, as he's proven in this episode. So he's,
yeah,
I like Jonathan's caution. It's the right thing for him to be doing.
Yeah, it's 100% in character, because he's always very protected, and he's always very hot-headed when it comes to Clark and his secret. But he's absolutely correct.
Yeah.
Completely. He's absolutely proven correct by the events of this episode. So they're talking about this, and then Martha finally starts to feel some side effects. Mm. You know, she drops a kettle and can't feel her arm. And you know, and then so then they take her to the hospital. So we have a plus one for hospital visit. We actually don't see Martha like in a hospital bed, but she's there, and Clark and Jonathan are talking about it, and they're just going to release her. And Clark's really, like, worked up about this. He's like, are you sure? Nothing's wrong with her? And Jonathan, he starts to get suspicious. He's like, are you sure there's something you're not telling me, Clark? Because the reason Clark is so on edge is because he knows that this is hanging over him, that someone he loves is going to die. So,
Yeah. No, and you can, again, you can understand that. It's playing that beat, isn't it? That, you know, is he going to lose Martha? And that's the whole thing, though. I mean, it's one of those things where if you're watching a show like this on a straightforward sense, you're going to probably know that Martha's going to be okay. But at the same time, it's hard to say, isn't it? Because it's episodic TV, and it's from a period where, you know, these kind of shows followed a relative formula. But at the same time, by the point Smallville was being made, you had episodic TV shows that weren't afraid to kill off quite significant characters at various different points. You know, and so it's. I'd like to think people were anxious that maybe this is going to happen. You know, I'd love to have been there at the time watching it and thinking, oh my god, you know, I really would, because it would just draw you more in as a viewer.
Well, do you think? And this is just a side mini tangent. Has the removal of opening credits helped make characters feel at risk? Right? Because, you know, maybe. It's like the old mentality was like, oh, well, if they're in the opening credits, they're fine. You know? Mm-hmm. And now they're either ending credits or they're just like text on a screen. So, you know, all the people, all the bean counters are like, well, if we kill this character off, we're going to have to re-edit the opening credits.
Yeah, let's, I mean, but then they used to break their own rules back then, didn't they? I mean, in this, there's no Lana. And she's in the main credits for the episode. You know, they never used to take characters out if they weren't in an episode, you know? So it's one of those things where, yeah, I suppose nowadays it is a little bit less. It's not as much in your face as in the days in Smallville when you'd see them in their glamour shots with the with the wind blowing on them, looking at the camera.
Yes. Now, you know, and I say that, you know, we've already said it. You know, John Schneider's Jonathan Kent, he gets killed off at the 100th episode, but he remains in the opening credits throughout the season. But he does appear. He appear in either video footage they're watching, or as a ghost. Or as spoilers, Brainiac impersonates him again in the season.
Yeah.
So, it's like, oh, okay. Well, he's still there.
Yeah.
So it kind
of
made sense.
Sort of.
But,
Yeah.
You know, you mentioned Kristen Kruk, and actually, she did not appear in this episode or in Exposed a couple episodes back, because she was filming the movie Partition at the time.
Okay. I was wondering, actually.
FYI.
Yeah, I was wondering where she was.
Yeah, sometimes she is one that has the full 22 episode order. Like, so she's going to get paid for all of them, no matter what, right?
Yeah.
And then you have characters like John Glover's Lionel or Erica Durance's Lois. They have 13 episode deals.
Right.
So they you know, they're like, okay, good. We'll use them in this one. We'll not use them in this one. They kind of strategically, you know, spread out their appearances throughout the season. But anyway, interesting broadcast TV episodic mindset examination we're doing here. But anyway, speaking of Lionel, he appears at the Daily Planet with a Miss Sullivan, which I always love, him and Chloe. I love him and Chloe. Being like the wild card characters, right? I love any time they have scenes together.
Yeah, it works really well, actually. And in this instance, he really, I think, and I'm not just saying this because, you know, it's my thing, but this episode really amps up the X-Files sort of thing with Chloe. It really does. You know, you've got her investigating something weird going on, breaking into a facility, looking at an alien ship with black oil running out of it, like, and then being chased away. And massively. And then you've got Lionel essentially operating like the Deep Throat character. You know, he's the one who goes to her with the information. You know, he might as well be going, Miss Sullivan, here you go. And he does, you know, he's giving her that information and putting her on a path.
There's a professor in Central Kansas A&M, Dr. Milton Fine.
Exactly. You can do it way better than me. That's, you know, as has been proven many times. But, and I love that. I think they do have a really good dynamic because she's naturally suspicious of him. And it feels like he's got some level of respect for Chloe and what she can actually do.
Because you've made it to the big leagues, Miss Sullivan. He brings her this bouquet. And it's funny, like, he gives her this bouquet. I'm like, is she going to, like, throw this away? No, but she kind of... It just shows you how weird the character dynamics have shifted because he tried to have her killed a year and a half ago. Blow up her safe house.
Yeah.
And now he's giving her a bouquet of flowers. And she's like, oh, okay, cool. Now he is a changed man, you know, as Lex even says in the episode. I don't know what happened to you with that meteor shower, right? Because he got activated by this crystal. And so you don't know his intentions at all because he's playing both sides, you know, much like a Deep Throat in the X-Files, right? Or even Mr. X. To use another informant, right?
Yeah.
He goes and he talks to Mulder. Then he goes and he talks to the cigarette-smoking man. Here, we got Lionel. He goes and he talks to Chloe. And then he goes and he talks to Lex. So you do not know where he falls. And that's what makes him an interesting character again, really. He's more of a wild card. And it's funny. He's reading this newspaper, by the way, while he's talking to her, like the Daily Planet, because he's like, oh, not that wedding announcements and obituaries are, you know... He's just making a slide of what she's currently doing, trying to give her a new story. But the headline on it says, Metropolis Strangler surrenders to police, which I just thought was a bizarre. It made you think of The Office and the Stratton Strangler. I saw that headline, but
is that
anyway?
That,
I'll take a screenshot of that because it's fun.
Is that a reference to anything from comics?
I don't know. Yeah. Like I'll have to go look it up.
Yeah.
But I honestly think the American version of The Office didn't come out till after this episode, or at least during it. So that was not an Office reference. I would have if I were a prop designer, I would absolutely have like a Scranton Strangler headline somewhere. But anyway, Lionel is here and he pitches her the story. He's like, there is a person at Central Kansas A&M. And you think he's going to talk about Clark, right? Because he's like, he's able to run faster than light and et cetera, et cetera. And he's describing all these powers, and you're like, oh, crap, he's on to Clark. And he's like, his name is Milton Fine. And you're like, wow, okay, that's a nice... You didn't expect that from him, right?
Yeah, has it been revealed how he knows about Fine in previous episodes? Because I can't remember. Or is it a
No, nothing has been revealed. Yeah. about the ship, right?
About
Fine. You just assume that because he is... somehow now connected to this Kryptonian mythology that he has this knowledge and he's going about sharing it in a very Lionel way.
Yeah.
So he's not just like, hey everyone, I have knowledge, listen to me. He's doing the same things he would do if he was still a bad guy.
Yeah, he's using it for his own personal gain, isn't he, for whatever. Because he goes to Lex, doesn't he? And he talks about how he knows about the warehouse with the spaceship and he mentions about how the people won't accept somebody trying to run for office who's fascinated by aliens. So he's obviously manipulating people from different aspects, isn't he? For different means.
Mm-hmm. Very much so. So then we have our next scene with Clark and Fine again. And we have a plus one for a blue shirt, red jacket, by the way, because Clark has changed into his classic pseudo Superman costume he has on the show. And he tracks Vine down just walking through campus, like in the middle of this crowd, and he starts talking about Krypton, which I found amusing. So he tells Vine, like, hey, my mom's finally sick. He's like, oh, Jor-El used to torture his prisoners in such a manner. And Clark's like, what? And he's like, yeah, he was a violent dictator. I can't protect you from this knowledge anymore. But there was a great hero of the people, Zod.
I laughed that loud at that, by the way.
Yeah. And they're like, oh, now I know what you're doing.
I was like, ah, yes, whatever, mate. What I thought with this, though, was that this is a pretty huge point of mythology, isn't it? To just throw at the audience, just on what seems to be a random conversation halfway through the episode. Like, this is this is massive. This is a huge thing for the Superman mythos.
But I kind of like that, because so often small, like at the end of this episode, for example, look, everyone, Lois Lane is going to join the Daily Planet to be a journalist. Yeah. But this, on the other hand, is like just kind of naturally, organically comes from the story. I'm like, that, I like the subtlety is not one of this show's strong suits. So I like how, as you said, it's kind of just kind of hidden in the middle of this episode in some random conversation. I like how Brainiac's talking about Jor-El and his disdain when he says, well, he made sure his son survived. Because obviously Clark, you know, got to Earth, and he tells Clark basically Jor-El was responsible for the destruction of Krypton. So it's a spin. It's like watching cable news conversation. Just spin.
Yeah.
Anyway,
how much of the audience do you think at that point know that he's flipped it around and that he's talking about the other guy? You know, do you think it's that most people watching it would not necessarily know all that Superman mythos?
Well, that's what I was saying earlier. Like, I think there's a lot of mythology here that people know the Christopher Reeve movies. Yeah, they know Neil before Zod. So they're like, oh, Zod. Oh, I see what you're doing here. And also, though, what makes you don't believe Brainiac, but you're like, I don't know. What is, you think maybe the truth is somewhere in between?
Yeah.
Because in like season 3 and 4, Jor-El was kind of painted to be kind of a dick, you know?
Yeah.
So you're like, I don't know. And that was actually a more interesting approach, I thought, if they could kind of stay that. Not that he would be flat out evil, but there were aliens and they have a different mindset about things, you know? So instead of like, I am the, you know, the Marlon Brando Jor-El, where he's like a god analog,
right?
You know, I will send them you, my only son. You know? So they play around with like the motivations of the Kryptonians, and it creates drama because they got to stretch this out. Like, and you know, we'll get there in a second, but if Clark and Jor-El just had like a 10-minute conversation, they could have cleared up a lot of stuff.
Yeah. Oh, how often that happens.
Oh, man.
Batman versus Superman. I'll just leave it there.
Understand. I understand. Speaking of Martha, you have to save Martha. We have a scene now where Martha is being examined, and Clark brings in Fine to examine Martha, and during this examination she really starts to convulse and get worse. So Fine's like, oh, let's bring a meteor rock out here and that'll ease with the pain. And it's really twisted from Brainiac, right? Because he's like, the only thing that can ease Martha's pain is something that does not allow Clark to be next to her, which is just another like kind of turn of the knife, I think, from him being masterminding all this. So I thought that was a very wicked and interesting element. And at this point, you know, Brainiac tells him, there's no cure for this. You know, your Earth mother will be dead within a day, basically. And they all go out to the patio, and finally Jonathan, you know, finds out that Jor-El did this. You know, and he handles it pretty well. I mean, what are you going to do, right? He's like, why did you tell us this, Clark? Because Clark says, well, you know, when I got resurrected, Jor-El said somebody I love would die, and he's like, well, look, I didn't want you guys to worry. And Jonathan's like, fair enough. Yeah. You know, I think he's more concerned with other stuff right now, but I don't know. I expect him to be a little more mad. But he's gotten used to this stuff because he's like, well, Clark, you're the only one who can fix this, so go fix it. You know, don't let your mother die. So they're on the same page here, I think.
He's just sort of skipped a few points, hasn't he? He's like, well, there's no point getting angry about it. This is what happens. Right, off you go. Sort it out. See you later. And
So it's been a while since it's been in the Fortress, actually. It's been actually that episode, third episode, Hidden, when Clark got resurrected, and with the body of Lionel Luthor being the vessel for Jor-El. So, there you go. So this is what I'm talking about. If Clark was like, hey, I just talked to this guy. He says he's Kryptonian. He says you are a horrible dictator. can we, oh, is that true? You know, but instead he's like, what are you doing to my mom? Kill me instead. No, you know,
yeah.
And Gerard's like, look, I have nothing to do with this. All right. You, the wheel of destiny is already set in motion, right? Which is true.
Mm.
But at the same time, like, you guys could just have a real conversation and clear up a lot of this stuff,
It's a little bit vague because, I mean, obviously, this is the thing, isn't it? Jor-El is dead in like a literal form, but he's still alive, isn't he? He's still sort of alive in that you know, consciousness sort of form. So he knows things. He's obviously operating on a linear path in that sense. So we could just turn around and go, yeah, okay, so fine, he's the bad guy. He's lying to you, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And it is that classic sort of trope, isn't it, of TV shows. And so many of the ones we love do it in that they, in order to create drama, in order to create mystery, they intentionally have these characters talking in ways that wouldn't happen in real life. But I think that's the thing. In a show like this, it's part of the fabric of it. It's part of the pattern.
Yes.
You want that level of, you know, mystery and sort of forced enigma in order to hit all these sort of mythological beats. And I think that's what makes it so entertaining. Apart from the simple fact that it wouldn't be dramatic if they have a normal conversation, but you know, that's why I suppose somebody could turn around and say, well, you know, you can't moan about Batman versus Superman then, can you? Because, you know, it's the same thing. It's the same point in theory. I mean, it's this whole separate conversation, but I don't necessarily think that's the case, because that's an example of something that completely builds an entire, you know, conflict, an entire literal battle around a very simple conversation. Whereas this is more that Jor-El, I like to think that Jor-El is maybe not telling him on purpose because he's trying to let him understand things in his own way. You know, so
there you go.
That's kind of where I get to on it. But yeah, you've got to be kind to the script and the show to look at it from that perspective, I guess.
There's also a line that Jor-El tells him. He says, "Even you cannot alter destiny." But also on this show, there's been conversations where Clark's like, "That's why I was sent to this planet. I think to change destiny."
Yeah.
Like, all right.
You can't alter destiny.
Get on the same page, please.
You can't alter destiny except at this point. Except there.
Right, and that's all he does is alter destiny.
Yeah.
And I always thought that was an interesting underlining factor of Superman, because he exists outside of like the destiny of this planet.
Mm.
So when he, you know, in the pilot, he saves Lex Luthor from death.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And then look what happens. He becomes president and a near apocalypse happens and he has to stop him. So I was like, I just thought that's a cool layer to Clark existing outside of whatever humans perceive as destiny. But that's real deep. I'm getting real deep now, so I'm going to move on. Talk about the Jor-El and Zod mix-up. Terrence Stamp, the voice of Jor-El. So that's another layer, right? Because you're like, oh, well, this makes sense.
Absolutely.
Because even in season two, when they first cast Terrence Stamp as the voice of Jor-El, which is great casting, but he was like kind of borderline antagonistic, and you're like, is he really Zod?
Yeah.
Like, that was a fan theory.
Oh, cool.
Like, Zod had like taken over the ship, taken over all the Kryptonian stuff, and he was lying to him the whole time, and it really was Zod.
That
so all these things are kind of right.
That would have been cool, let's be honest. And that leads to, you know, Terrence Stamp maybe appearing as like an older Zod. I think I would have proper geeked out at that. Big time.
If they were making Smallville today, they might have done it, right? They might have, because they do that stuff on The Flash all the time.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, you talk about the Fine being the mentor here. Every season of The Flash is the same story. Like, Barry meets someone, he's allies with them, turns out they have a nefarious purpose. About halfway through or near the end, they get revealed, that becomes the main villain.
Yeah.
Anyway, rinse, wash, repeat. It all started here with Smallville people. But moving on.
Yeah.
Now we have that Lex Lionel scene. We discussed. Lex is looking at security footage of the spaceship and how sometimes it gets interrupted, and obviously that's whenever Fine goes in and out. And hey, he's a supercomputer, so I believe he could do that.
Yeah.
But we have a plus one for shut that laptop, because as soon as Lionel comes in, Lex shuts that laptop. That's why I added it to the tally board, man, because people shut laptops all
the
time on this show.
They do. It makes you wonder what's on there, really, doesn't it?
Yeah.
You know, if you're
it's like
you're a conspiracy theorist, you know, does make you wonder.
But Lionel comes in there and he brings up the spaceship, and you know, Lex tries to talk around it or whatever. But he tells Lionel that you're the eccentric in the family, Dad. And Lionel tells him, yes, but I'm not the one running for public office.
Yeah. That's a good point.
Get your house in order, son.
I like, though, you know, as I mentioned earlier, I like the line about how people don't want to hear about aliens anymore. You know, because like, this is, when's this, 2005? You know, and we can assume this is happening, this is taking place in 2005, you know, the actual show.
Correct.
And by this point, you know, 10 years ago, it might have been different, you know, when there was a lot more, you know, public interest and intrigue about all this stuff. But, you know, we've kind of moved past a point in the mid-2000s where this kind of thing is on anyone's radar anymore. So the idea that Lex might actually suffer for showing an interest in UFOs and aliens and, you know, extraterrestrials, I like that. I think that's an interesting beat, especially wrapped up in an episode which has definite sort of X-Files conspiracy alien sort of threads underneath.
See, this is a perfect episode for you to be on.
It's almost like you planned it, Zach.
It's almost as if I somehow select these episodes based off the strengths and interests of my guests. It's funny how that works.
Bizarre. But,
So Chloe, on Lionel's tip, has gone undercover. PI Chloe, she's like in a trench coat, hiding in a phone booth.
Now, it's just a funny image. You mentioned earlier about how Clark just happens to wander and find Fine on campus. How long has Chloe been in that booth? Like, because he's just then walking out. You think, were you there for like hours just waiting in that phone booth for him to come out? Oh, it happened. Oh, there he is. You know, I always wonder that.
Surely he has to take this path. You know, I mean,
College
campuses are huge.
How does she know? Exactly. How does she know?
Yeah.
Yeah, I love it.
And by the way, speaking of this college campus, I didn't know it was in Smallville. I thought it was in Kansas.
Right.
Like, I don't know, maybe like an hour away. But Lionel says, oh, it's in Smallville. Like, or Chloe says, oh, the college is in Smallville. I'm like, whoa, since when has this been in Smallville? All right. Because if it's true, that's 3 hours away from Metropolis where Chloe works. So I don't know. Whatever. I guess she said, hey, guys, I got a hot lead. I'm going to take a couple days off. I'm staking out this phone booth.
Yeah.
This guy has to walk by at some point, and I'm going to get him. So anyway. Oh, man. Now, our next scene here, this is the scene that really kind of, you know, drives the point home that maybe Martha might really die. Mm-hmm. It's a great scene between Clark and Martha, like from a parent to a child, you know, because he feels guilty. And she's like, no, don't you ever feel guilty. I wouldn't have it any other way. I would gladly give up my life for you to live on. And that's such a great motherly son bond. I think they do that. They don't give Martha Kent a lot of stuff to do in the show, but when they do it, Annette O'Toole is a great actress and they really sell it. And I really feel the connection here.
Mm. Yeah, no, me too. They've got a really lovely dynamic, you know, and that's why I think even if, you know, you're watching this episode thinking she's going to be okay, she's not going to die, at the same time, you're invested in it because they've got such a great, you know, family warmth about them that you just care. You know, you just care about these characters and you care about what they're going through. So, no, it's great. It's great. They just play it really nicely.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And even in a show where we're 90-something episodes in and we already have 70-plus hospital visits, you take this one more seriously than others.
Yeah.
So that's credit to this episode for making you care, right?
Yeah.
So then, Chloe's at the Daily Planet. She has her profile from the college website of Dr. Milton Fine up. I'll make sure I take a screenshot of that and share it. Those are always fun. And then Chloe comes in, and she got her feelings hurt by Lex, as Chloe even calls her out for.
Yeah.
She's like, you got your feelings hurt, and now you want to be a journalist, because she wants Chloe to, like, dig up some dirt on Lex, so, you know, to kind of get back at him for basically calling her out for being a college dropout. Mm. You know? And this is how she gets into journalism? Like, okay,
yeah.
Show, sure.
It's it's a little bit thin, isn't it, really?
But, you know, they got seven more, what's season five? They got 5 more years to figure this out, so they're fine.
What contract was Erica Durant on then? Was she on a 13 or a 22, as in Lois appearing?
Yeah, she was in a 13-episode deal.
Right, okay.
Because of the movie division, they were like, all right, we'll let you have Lois Lane, but she can only be in 13 episodes.
Right.
And then finally in season 8, as I've said many times on this podcast, that's when they let her become full-on Lois Lane. That's when she could be in every episode. That's when she's, you know, the basically number two after Tom Welling on the show. And then she can really thrive and become the character that we all know and love. But right now, there's a lot of spinning of the wheels, occasional, like, hey, guys, Clark and Lois are going to be a couple in the future. Hey, she's going to be a journalist. You know, all that kind of stuff. I'm like,
Yeah.
Like, show us, don't tell us.
Yeah, yeah, right? Exactly.
And that's the problem.
Yeah.
But so Chloe's talking about how she, Chloe did a lot off screen, by the way. She's like, oh yeah, so I followed Milton Fine to this warehouse, and you know, yeah. where are those scenes?
Did they cut a lot from the episode?
Yeah, there are no deleted scenes of this. I generally thought there might have been.
Yeah.
But again, show don't tell.
Exactly.
But anyway, Lois says, well, now you have your handy sidekick, so maybe we'll get in. So so they go to the Zuthakur warehouse, and it is very X-Files.
Yeah, definitely. Very, very. Very.
Now, I have to take a moment, though. You know what else is X-Files? The product placement here. All right?
Right.
So we have a plus one for product placement Pete, as I call it. Even though Pete's no longer here, he held the torch for the first 3 years of product placement. And Lois is like becomes a new car salesman here. And it made me think of the X-Files in season 10. When Mulder's in that car chase.
Oh, yeah.
And they keep showing the features of the car.
Yes. You know? I mean, they do. I can't remember what the make of the car is now, but you're right. It's like, oh, come on, guys. Yeah.
So the companion actually speaks to this. Smallville, the official companion, season 5, by Craig Byrne, available wherever books are sold. Associate producer Mark Warshaw talks about this product placement. He said, quote, "We try our best to make things organic, but when you get into product integration, you have a lot of moving parts. You're working with the demands of the studio and the network, which you were always doing, but now you also have to deal with the advertising agency and the client. You're trying to keep everybody happy. One thing you always have to remember is that television, radio, magazines, anything that's free or pretty close to free content is supported by advertising. And that's how every single television show that isn't on paid cable gets made. You have to figure out a way to keep the advertising coming on television, or else television as we know it goes away. So it's changing, and it's morphing, and we've always been working on how you do it so that as it changes and morphs, we do it right, and things are more organic." So that is there. Look, guys, we're sorry we had a weird car commercial in the middle of our episode, but let me explain to you how television works. So anyway, I thought that was fascinating that he went on for like a whole paragraph about that. And that's, because that's how Chloe gets in. Lois pulls up to this, you know, guard shack, you know, and she's like, oh, hi, I'm lost. Can you help me out? Oh, you want to, he's like, oh, that's a nice car. Oh, you want to check it out? And he goes and sits in the car and, I mean, it is funny because Lois is doing a horrible job selling the car. Like, oh, look, it has a little compartment here for breath mints. You know, but it's pretty ridiculous, I think.
It is. It's funny because I must confess, I hadn't necessarily guessed that it was overt product placement and that they were trying to sell a car as part of
the show
reason.
Has been much worse in the past. So, yeah, I was surprised as well.
Yeah, it's not too on the nose. But now you've said that, I can completely understand. Because they could have just had a whole scene of her doing what she does towards the end when she says, oh, I've got to get back to work, where she starts flirting with him. They could have just done that.
Right.
You know, and they didn't have to have him go in the car and go, look what this, look at, oh, it's got all the usual refinements. You know, it's got all, so it is a little bit, for a security guard who's got a beautiful woman there, you know, being a bit flirty, he's far too interested in the mechanics of that car. You know,
it's not even like it's not a convertible. It's not a Hummer. Yes. It's not a DeLorean. No. It's not a unique car. It's a generic Ford Focus or something. Right? Ford Fusion is what it was.
Yeah,
what the hell, man?
It's just, mate, you would not be that interested in this car, you know, in the real world. So yeah, you've got to take that with a pinch of salt, really. But they just about get away with it.
You're right, though. It is a lot more. It's funny that they go on this huge we're sorry explanation about it. Because later seasons, Chloe's so, she's like, oh, well, my Yaris gets pretty good mileage. Oh, but, you know, I mean, there's none of that going on here.
Yeah.
But anyway, this distraction allows Chloe to go in and do the investigative reporting. Again, Lois is like her sidekick.
Yeah.
Doing all this goofing around, and Chloe's the one doing the Lois Lane storyline. But very X-Files, as you said. She goes into this warehouse, looks through this air vent with this fan. You know, it's very atmospheric. Yeah. Sees Fine come out of the spaceship as the black oil.
Yeah, it's right? The black oil. And it's even got Mark Snow's music over the top.
Yes.
And obviously, he scored the X-Files. So I'm like, what show am I watching? Have I just stepped into, like, where's Mulder? Like, what's going on? But, I mean, that's the thing, though. It's intentional. Like, you can tell it's intentional. You know that it's, in many ways, riffing on a lot of those tropes, you know. Even though, you know, I know, obviously, you know, Fine and Brainiac, he's all from the comics. There is all that lore from the comics and the, You know, the spaceship, even though it looks like the X-Files kind of spaceships, I'm not saying that they're ripping the show off, but there's definite connective DNA. But it's fine. It's fine. Absolutely. And it's really good. It's really entertaining.
It's Milton fine.
Yeah. Very good. Very good.
Couldn't help myself there. But yes, he emerges from the ship in the T-1000 style. As he does
very T-1000. That's a definite other one. Absolutely. 100%.
And he has his black crystal in his hand, and he goes about his business, and that comes into play later. You know, have we ever talked about this on microphone, though? Gillian Anderson, right, would have been perfect as Chloe's mom on the show.
Yeah.
That would have been my dream casting for Chloe's mom.
Chloe's
not quite
mom?
We do. She's played by Linda Carter, actually, Wonder Woman, in season 6. So.
Yeah. Cool, okay.
Her hair color changes a few times. Before they cast an actress, Chloe's mom was blonde.
Okay.
But then they cast Linda Carter and she became a brunette. But I just, strong woman character in genre television, that would have been a great legacy casting for Chloe to have Gillian Anderson. But I mean, this is the CW. By the time we saw her mom, it's like 2006. You know, Gillian Anderson is off doing bigger and better things.
She was in England by then.
Yeah, she's left. Done. She... done with the U.S.
Yeah.
I'll come back. I'll do one more stupid X-Files movie, but that's it. Leave me alone, Hollywood.
It's basically true.
Anyway. Oh, boy. But yeah, she even kind of looks like I could see her as
definitely.
Mom.
Yeah, anyway, that's definitely. Anyway. That would work.
Yeah. So, she gets caught, but then Lois drives through the security gate and knocks over the security guard, and they speed off into the night, and that's that. They make a quick escape. And then Clark, he goes to Fine and pleads with them. Telling him, look, I'll do anything it takes. We got to save my mom. And again, Fine is still selling. He's like, well, there is one thing, but I wouldn't recommend it. Even though it's exactly what he wants him to do, right? It's genius manipulation, right?
Yeah.
Because he does make a point. He's like, yeah, he's your, he might be a monster, but he's your only tie to your, Kryptonian heritage. Mm. But Clark's like, I don't care. He's like, all right, fine. Here's what we're going to do.
Yeah.
We're going to go to the fortress. We're going to tear it down. And because the crystals in the fortress are controlling the disease, and if you destroy the fortress, you destroy his power, and Martha will be fine. So they're going to go off and do this. Then we almost get a nice adult scene between Jonathan and Martha. It's a little generic, and then I thought it might take like a less generic turn, but it gets interrupted by Chloe showing up. he's like, honey, you're strong. If anyone can get through this, you can. It's like, okay, somebody said we need some generic, inspiring dialogue. So that's what that is.
Throw that in there.
But then Chloe shows up and she's looking for Clark. And she's like, oh my God, he's not with his professor. He's not what he seems to be. And Johnson's like, yeah, we know all about him.
Yeah, we're way ahead of you, Chloe. We're way ahead of you.
Yeah, whatever, Chloe. So he's like, where are they? It's like, well, they went to the caves. So she runs to the caves. And we see Clark and Fine with the octagonal disc.
Yeah.
Which this is the dumbest transportation system ever. Yeah. Because this has happened multiple times. You put the disc in. It transports you to the fortress, but then your disc stays there. And that's how Chloe gets there when she follows him. It's like, how are you supposed to get back?
That's true. Unless there's another one at the fortress, like an identical one that you use. But it's the worst system ever. Like, that's not how keys work.
Well, maybe the idea is like he's not supposed to keep going back and forth. Like, oh, you're supposed to go to the fortress, start your training, become Superman.
Yeah,
right? But you keep going both ways on this one way road.
You're
but,
using it as your man cave. Like, it's not. That's not what it's for, Clark.
Literal man cave. So the key stays behind, and that's when Chloe finally catches up to them. She's just behind him. She uses the key to get there, and that's how she's there to save the day. But they get to the fortress, and Fine gives Clark the crystal that he had emerged from the ship with. He's like, it's a self-destruct crystal. You put it in there, the fortress will be destroyed. Clark puts it in there, and then we start getting the fortress is all shaken. It's actually very much like Superman 2 when everything turns red, when he turns on the powers to remove. Again, lots of Superman 2 elements here. We get a little more in a second. Because the fortress is all turning red and stuff, and then this portal opens, and we see this... the classic 2D Phantom Zone prism coming out,
awesome.
and a very vaguely looking Terrence Stamp CGI face of Zod, right?
It's great, though. I mean, having that, those callbacks, the fact the fortress already is the same design as the one like we've seen in the Superman films of old, the Richard Donner era films, and then you've got the same sort of or floating diamond ship Phantom Zone thing. I think it's great. I really do. Because equally, you know, yes, okay, Smallville had to work and create some of its own mythology, sort of tethered to the Kryptonian mythology based on what it was allowed to do. But having all this stuff in there suddenly is like, oh, this is really cool. Because all that movie stuff is, for a lot of people, it is what you sort of identify iconically, visually with Superman, because that's the stuff you grew up watching. You know, even though the comics have probably done different kind of things with it and all that, obviously going back years and years and years, seeing that stuff, it just adds a little extra validity maybe to Smallville as a piece. Mm-hmm. And I loved that. I thought it was great.
Yeah, I mean, to the general populace, the Christopher Reeve movies are and forever will be the definitive Superman story.
Yeah.
So to tie into that, you know, it seems to, you know, we're all part of that same greater mythology. That's what that stuff is telling us.
Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely. But I have a question, right? You know, we talk about the omnipresent Jor-El. Where is he here?
Yeah,
you know, you think, hey, guys, stop.
Yeah, it's strange, isn't it?
It's very convenient when he talks and doesn't talk.
Yeah, it's the absent God metaphor, isn't it, still with Jor-El? You know, he's there when he needs to be, or when, you know, what he wants to be, but sometimes when you need him, no, he's not always there, particularly.
See, I like your theory. He's letting Clark experience free will.
Yeah. You know? Could be.
The ever-ending existential debate about free will versus choice. Jor-El is putting on new effect. Like, hey, you know what? You're a teenager. I'm going to let you make your mistakes, all right? And you'll come back to me later. So, but yes, it is very convenient when he talks and doesn't talk, because he could clear up a lot of stuff, as we already discussed.
I'll let you make mistakes, but even if it means unleashing a alien warlord onto your planet, like, even if that happens,
that'll teach him.
Exactly,
that'll learn him good. But then, you know, then we get the final turn from Clark's perspective anyway, the turn from Fine, because he pulls out some kryptonite. And Clark's like, you're not even Kryptonian, are you? He's like, no, I was created by Kryptonians, but I'm a whole lot smarter. So I like how he's just kind of an arrogant ass now, like the whole facade has been removed. He's like, hey, I could have done without you, thanks a lot, chump.
It's great.
And he puts the kryptonite on his chest and walks off. So.
It's great, though. I mean, I really think it works. The way they play all of this throughout this entire episode, and obviously in previous episodes, it's a really good payoff. You know, you really do think that, Masters has played this really well. He's been well constructed. And even if you know he's going to betray Clark, it's still just really well done and well executed. About the end, I was like, yes, good. Good use of a villain, that is.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I like how Clark, like, we get all that drama out of the way. He quickly realizes, he's like, oh, when you were talking about Jor-El, you were really talking about Zod. I'm like, it's good for him, and it's good for the audience, because you know people out there would still be confused. Like, what? Was Jor-El still a bad guy? Yeah. I don't know.
Thanks for that, Clark.
That's all cleared up. Yeah, thank you. And then, then Brain acts like, oh, call him General Zod. Welcome to our new home. And he's waiting for him to kind of float out of the fortress, or float out of the Phantom Zone in the fortress. But Chloe comes and says, just as Lois was Chloe's sidekick, now Chloe is Clark's sidekick, comes, gets the kryptonite, throws it away. There's a little bit of a fight between Brainiac and Clark. It's fine, I guess, for Smallville standards.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not the most epic fight in the world, but, they throw each other around a little bit, and, Brainiac could have used some more creative powers, being, like, basically the T-1000. Like, could have, like, wrapped him up in some mechanical tentacles, and that would have been cool, but we ain't got the budget for that, okay? So
yeah, exactly. And I think it's the only thing that undercuts Fine's villainy is the fact that he's so busy staring at this portal that he completely misses Chloe, turn up, run down, chuck the rock away. It's just, it's so, all he, if he'd have turned around.
Take the crystal, like, out of the panel.
You know, it's a little bit like, oh, come on. You're the, it, so that's a shame, but fine. If you see what I mean, no pun intended.
Fine. that's what they should have called this episode.
Yeah, fine.
Tony, we figured it out. It's fine.
Yeah. Why did they call it Fine? It would have been, would have meant.
So what'd you think of that one? It was fine. Oh man. Oh boy. So, Clark pulls out the crystal, and obviously they have their fight, and then the fight ends with Fine being impaled on the console. Mm. Which you think would have, like, infected the fortress, which actually happens in season 8, by the way.
Right.
Brainiac infects the fortress, and it's like, Now, apparently in the companion, there's a brief mention that there was some talk about how this was supposed to set up the season finale, like, with Brainiac
is part of the Fortress now, and that's why Zod gets released at the season finale because of various things. That they didn't really tie all that together. It was very unclear. A lot of the Brainiac Zod stuff is very unclear. Like in the season premiere,
yeah,
we had the two, the discount non-Inursa, as I call them, the two other Kryptonians that arrived. They were looking for Kal-El.
Mm.
I assume now that they were going to get him to join them so they could use his fortress so they could release Zod. I'm just going to, you know, you have to infer a lot of things
because
it's very vague.
Yeah.
You know, but don't you like TV shows that make you think, Tony? You know?
This does that. Oh, certainly, man. Does that.
This does that. And then in classic, let's clean all this up. You know, when Fine, quote unquote, dies, he disappears. The ship disappears for some reason from Luther's hangar, and then Martha wakes up and she's fine.
Now that's very X-Files. The ship just vanishing. You know, it is because that would happen all the time. The evidence just disappears out of nowhere, and you're like, "What? Where did that go?" You know. So yeah, I'll give it its due there. Yeah.
So then we have a great Clark and Martha wrap up scene. I really like how it's directed too, like this wide shot and they're kind of almost silhouette.
Yeah.
Martha's out there with Shelby the dog and Clark walks up to her and he says, "Hey, Dad has given me so much, but you're my heart and my soul." And I'm like, "Oh, that's great." You know, that shows the two different components of the parents and what they bring to him and his upbringing. So I really like the Clark Martha bond is something that they don't examine it a lot on the show, like I said, but when they do, it's A+ every single time.
Absolutely,
I think. So, because sometimes the Clark and Jonathan, I mean, this show is ultimately about fathers and sons, you know, Lex and Lionel, Clark and Jonathan. But the Clark and Jonathan stuff can get old after a while because it's Clark, you know, you got to be safe. You got to protect your son. You know, there's a lot of one noteness from there. Martha, there's a lot more layers to it, I think.
Yeah.
So anyway, then we have our wrap up with Chloe and Clark and Shelby. Get that dog, man. He loves cuddling up with people. He's next to Chloe, next to the fire.
Yeah.
And I love it. Chloe's like, "Hey, Clark," he's because he asks her, "How did you get there anyway?" He's like, "Well, you left your key. You got to be more careful." So the show being self-aware, like, all right, good.
Yeah.
Like, I get a little golf clap from me. And they kind of dump some exposition at each other. It's like, "Well, how did you find out?" "Well, Lionel told me." "Well, what do you think he was?" "Well, he was a Kryptonian AI." I'm like, "All right, now is everybody on the same page now?" You know, but you know, they do mention, you know, that Clark, and he went, and again, stuff happening off screen. Clark and went and checked that warehouse that the ship was at, and it wasn't there. Very X-Files, like, "All right, Scully, I'm going to take you to this alien cloning facility. Mulder, there's nothing here."
Yeah. But there was. It was there. I promise. Yeah.
You're trying to tell me they cleaned out this entire facility they'd been in for years in 12 hours, Mulder? Anyway.
Yeah.
Oh, so good. And then finally, we have a final Lex scene at the mansion, and he's really upset at Lionel because he thinks Lionel stole the ship.
Mm.
And, you know, if I were Lex, I think that too, because you came and you told me to move the ship, and now the ship is gone.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? But this is where Lex starts seeing that Lionel might be more connected to this than he thought, which is interesting, which he goes on to be for the rest of the season.
Mm. And it's a good way of continuing that antipathy, isn't it? Because that's one of the best things about Smallville, I think, the Lex and Luther, you know, back and forth. You know, it's very different from the back and forth that Clark has with Jor-El, I suppose, as his father figure. You know, it's the direct, you know, it's that whole thing of how Lionel is responsible for Lex Luthor as well, you know, in the way he is. It's all, a lot of it's based on his father's twisted psychology. So it's really good. Yeah, those two aren't in all of this, but they're important to it in their own way. Yeah.
Yeah, and it gets really intense in the end. Lex, like, kind of grabs Lionel's head for a second. You're like, "Whoa!" Like, they get a little physical, and then he kind of walks off, and that just shows the slow escalate. That would have never happened in like season one or two, unless it was like super heated. But now you see, like, because you know they're turning things up as the show comes to its natural conclusion after 5 years.
Yeah.
We got 5 more years after.
Well, this is it. Sorry, I was just going to say that because that's what they were. They operated on the 5 seat, like the X-Files again. They operated on the 5 season policy, didn't they? So they probably were all filming this episode, assuming that season 5 was it, and that this was building.
Well, that's why they're ramping stuff up this season. Absolutely.
Yeah.
But you know, a victim of its own success, it ran twice as long as they intended.
Yeah.
So, but you know all about that as an
yes, 100%.
So then we get our great quote unquote scene of that we've kind of mentioned a couple times, where Lois comes back to the Daily Planet and she's like, "You get anything on Lex yet?" And Chloe's like, come on, Lois. And Lois's like, no. I was selfish before, I admit it. But now I have a problem with people who use money in politics. I'm going to get to the bottom of it, you know? And it's like, okay, again, tell, don't show. Yeah. The number one rule of storytelling. I'm like, that's just, it's kind of, it's so kind of forced. There's another ridiculous reason Chloe gets into journalism as well in season 6. The episode where Clark gets his super breath. He sneezes. It's called sneeze. She's out for a jog. She's out for a jog. And then a barn door falls next to her. And she's like, I'm going to get into journalism now. And I'm like, okay, guys. You keep trying to make this work. Listen. But I just, it's the whole, like, you know, the anvil, as they call it. And so it's like where she, Chloe's like, well, that's how it starts. And
yeah.
Lois turns around and she sees the Daily Planet logo.
That was so like, on the nose. I was watching that thinking, oh my God. Visual telegraphing to the max. Okay, we get it. Boy. Okay, we get it. She's Lois Lane. We get it.
And then finally, talk about telegraphing, right? Clark and Jonathan have a final scene, and it's a good scene. Yeah. And they talk about, oh, well, is, you know, your mother's fine. And Clark's like, well, that threat's still out there. And Jonathan's like, well, you know, the best thing we can do is enjoy the time we have together. And then it's like, pow. Yeah. I'm like, whoa. Like,
enjoy the next three episodes.
In case you didn't know, this just confirmed for you Jonathan Kent's going to die. Yeah. Because it's so weird. Usually Smallville, you know, it has your Mark Snow music or it has a pop song. This, it's like there was no music at the end and there's a big bow.
Yeah. It's like, okay, guys, get ready because it's coming.
You know, Professor Fine said that human beings were insignificant and couldn't be depended on. He obviously didn't know you very well.
Please. Robo Professor knows as much about human nature as R2-D2. What was he, anyway? I mean, I saw him materialize from a bunch of nuts and bolts that spilled out of the spaceship.
I guess he was some sort of Kryptonian artificial intelligence.
And what did he want with you?
He wanted me to help him free a rebel Kryptonian named Zod. What I still don't understand is how you got on Fine's trail.
You're not gonna like this very much. Lionel Luther gave me the lead.
Lionel? How'd he know about Fine?
I have no clue. But I hope he doesn't know about the spaceship. You know, Clark, you should really get a hold of that thing before somebody else beats you to it.
There's a problem. I checked out that warehouse you told me about. The ship's gone.
Well, the master of the shell game must have moved it.
Or?
Or what?
Or I have a bigger problem than I thought.
Solitude got an 8.5 out of 10 on IMDb. And Neil Bailey from the Superman homepage gave it a 4.5 out of 5. So, Tony, I ask you, on the letter grade scale, what would you give Solitude?
Yeah, I think Solitude is a solid, I'd give it a solid B+, definitely, I think. Because it's a really good involving episode. And, you know, I confess, I hadn't watched a lot of Smallville recently in the run-up to this episode. And I've seen these before. So I remembered this episode. I remembered aspects of the storyline. But watching it independently, as a result, I was just really entertained. I remembered why it was such a good episode. It's considering this is episode 8 of 22, there's a lot of really good stuff in this. There's a lot of stuff that you'd almost expect to come in a premiere or a finale. And they're not afraid to do it, to wrap up sort of the first sort of arc of the season. And then I know it links to some extent into the finale and stuff. But this is big stuff. This is big stuff that goes back to the movies, back to the core mythology of Superman. And I really, really enjoyed it. I think overall, even though some bits of it are a bit clunky, you could say that about any episode of episodic television. And I was really entertained. So yeah, solid B+ from me.
Well, I agree with you, Tony. I'm going to also give it a B+. It was just underneath that first tier of greatness, because, I mean, we were poking some holes and having some fun with with a few things here. It's funny, people have said, like, it sounds like you hate watch this show. It's like, no. I do love the show.
Yeah.
So I have fun poking things at it and discussing it. And yeah, no, absolutely. All the mythological ties to the Superman mythos, kind of the culmination of the first part, the first stretch of Brainiac's presence on the show. Just great stuff. You know, all the Martha and Clark stuff is excellent. You know, undercover Chloe, you know, doing her Mulder and Scully thing was
really
great.
Exciting.
And yeah, just, it you know, the actual climax of, like, we're going to throw you 30 feet and you're going to die. I'm like, And I get, this is not a premiere. It's not a finale. They don't have the budget for some epic battle or something, yeah. Right? But yeah, that was you know, that might have pushed it up in the A range if we had a really cool super battle, yeah, you know. But but yeah. So B plus for you, B plus for me. Yep. Going down the tally board here, we have a plus one for blue shirt, red jacket. So that's 29. We have a plus one for hospital visit because Martha goes to the hospital. Yep. That's 74.
74. Wow. Out of 90, what is this episode? 95?
96.
Amazing. Brilliant.
I live for the day when it overtakes the actual episode.
That'd be brilliant. So, it might happen, yeah. You never know.
Yes. We have a plus one for... we have a plus one for not the last son of Krypton because we see Zod. He's about to come through the portal there. So that brings us to 4 so far. We have a plus one for product placement Pete because Lois trying to sell that Ford Fusion car. By the way, the song Wicked Game by H.I.M. is playing in the car.
Right.
That's the only time we hear any music in the episode.
Yeah.
So during our car commercial, but that's our product placement, Pete. So 7 so far. Pete has left us, but his category remains. And then finally, we have a plus one for shut that laptop because Lex shuts that laptop as soon as Lionel comes in. That brings us to 14.
Very good.
So far in the show. And this episode is a Bechdel test pass.
Yes.
Because Lois and Chloe have a lot of conversations. Yes, they're talking about Lex and politics, but they're also talking about journalism. Yeah. So this one counts as a pass.
Excellent.
So there you have it, Tony and Matt. Welcome back to Smallville. A lot of fun talking about the show with you again. If people want to find you out there, talking about all the many things you discussed, Tony, where's the best place to find you?
Oh, all over the place. Thank you, firstly, for having me back, Zach. It's been really nice. And hopefully it won't be another 3 seasons. Hopefully it won't be like season 8 by the time I'm back on again. so thanks. But yeah, you can find me at my website, ajblackwriter.com, for all kinds of writing on TV, movies, and things like that. And I'm on Twitter at ajblackwriter. And through there, you'll find the links to We Made This, my podcast network with the XCast, and my film podcast, motion pictures podcast, and various other different things that's going on at We Made This Pod on Twitter. So you can look me up there and find out all the things I'm doing, which not even I can remember everything anymore. So I just go through the day and see what happens.
Well, we're on this parallel journey, man. I'm on season 5. You just started season 5 of the XCast at the time these episodes come out. So. And you got, let's see, you basically have 10 seasons.
Yeah,
you know,
pretty much.
I know you technically have 11, but if you add the seasons 10 and 11 together, that's basically
near
enough
seasons. Yeah, it's pretty much exactly the same. What's the final episode count of Smallville, like in terms of actual...
It's 217 or 218, depending on if you count like an episode as a two-parter or not. There's a lot of debate about that in fan circles, but we settle on 218.
Yeah, I think The X-Files is just under that. So, yeah, we're on pretty similar track. So we should get to the end around the same time, in theory.
We all have our ebbs and flows of when we go on breaks and when we come back. So it's just funny how we're still a little bit in sync.
It is, actually,
so I always enjoyed that as well. So. As for me, you can find me on Twitter at MoronZach. That's MoronZach. I'm also the host of Franchise Fatigue, a podcast about movies, remakes, sequels, when they get fatigued. You can find us on Twitter at UFP Earth. Also a host of Standard Orbit, Trek FM's original series podcast. We talk about all things Captain Kirk and the Enterprise over there. You can find us on Twitter at Trek FM. As for the podcast here, you can find us on Twitter at AlwaysMallville with 1S. You can find us on Facebook at Always Swarm to Smallville, and you can send us an email at alwaysmallville@gmail.com, once again with 1S. Well, Merry Lexmas, everybody. That's our next episode coming up. So our solitude is over. It's time for Lexmas, so we'll be back next week bringing in the holiday spirit with Lexmas. But until then, always hold on to Smallville. No.
why?